Stacy, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. I'll call to order the Taney County Commission meeting, April 27th, 2015, at 9:03 a.m. Don't look like we have any public comments, so we'll move on to any commission remarks. No commission remarks. Monthly budget report. Mr. Fenley.
Let's go on to the next one.
All right. Accounts payable.
Move to approve checks numbers 343894 through 343970. There are no warrants, but there are three journal entries. Excuse me, one transfer and two journal entries.
Do you want to state what they are, or just making us aware that there are, because we know what they are?
You just letting you know. 911 to GCR for transferred monies for postage usage for December and for paper usage for March through April.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Approval of previous and executive session minutes.
Move to approve previous meeting minutes of April 6th, April 13th, April 20th, and April 22nd, and executive session minutes of April 20th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. We want to go back up to monthly budget report. Mr. Fenley.
Guys, we've done one in April, so I don't know whether this was history or what. I don't have anything new. So if you guys don't have any questions, I think somebody put it on there twice. I don't know. You usually just do one monthly budget. So can you inform me better, I guess?
All right, then.
I think we just wanted to see you again.
I was going to be in here anyway. I just would, would have been a little later.
All
thank
right.
you, guys.
We have next on the agenda TIF discussion. I know we visited in the preliminary this morning with Miss Neely.
I would assume she would be here.
I can tell you the situation would be like that.
All right.
They have been corresponding with me, Carl, and Jamie both, and then Donna has also corresponded with me. She feels like that she needs some direction from the commission as to whether or not we should be paying on the 1% that the Department of Revenue withholds. We did talk about possibly paying with that 1% withheld, and I think that Carl suggested that they would at least like for us to do that, if not, if we're still in question as to whether or not we're going to be able to pay on the 1%. If you're confident that you feel like you should be paying on that, then you need to give Donna that direction too, because she and I both feel like that we should not be paying on the 1%.
Do you guys want to join us? So there, you can sit over here or over there, wherever you guys want to sit. Yeah, it doesn't matter. And then just, if you don't mind, state your name in the microphone so we have it here.
My name is Carl Garrett, and with the City of Branson. And I'm the supervisor of licensing and tax compliance for the city. And with me is Jamie Roush. And Jamie's the finance director, and so she handles all our payables and the payroll, and then in terms of the receipts. And I work for Jamie. And so in part of, my responsibilities is I oversee the TIF collections for the city and basically, you know, prepare that and submit the billing, so to speak, to the county and any other, you know, government entity, such as like the Missouri Department of Economic Development and things like that. So I sent an email, which I don't know whether you all got that or not. I sent that last Wednesday. I don't know if did you all have a chance to see that or not. You may.
What's your email address?
If not, I'll give you a copy.
What's your email address?
That I sent it to?
No, from? Is it C. Garrett or
Garrett? C. Garrett, yes. But I'll be happy to give you a copy, hard copy. If you like, yeah. Like me, I just don't have a hard copy.
You say you sent that Wednesday?
I sent this on the 22nd.
The
but I thought that kind of shared some of the there were some points on there that I thought it might be some observations, and I'll just say this: observations from the city's perspective of things for you to think about in terms of your decision process. And if you don't mind, I can be happy to kind of run through those.
Sure,
so willing there. So basically, at this point, there's 2 monthly payments that's outstanding from the city's perspective. And those amounts to something close to just over $339,000. And that assumes that if we were to make that payment, that assumes that you're going to do it on the basis of your historical practice of paying 50% of the sales tax that's generated by the businesses. I know that Donna, Ms. Neely, is, you know, I believe she's reviewed the supporting detail. I don't think we have any issue with the basic amounts, but the issue and her concern is that the Department of Revenue is keeping 1% of the sales tax as an administrative fee, and therefore the county is actually only receiving 49% of the sales tax from the business rather than the expected 50%. So the anticipation would be that you guys would be getting 50%. And what's happening is the Department of Revenue is keeping 1% as a fee. As in terms of observations, the current process that we have in place is longstanding. In other words, this has started with the first TIF back in 1995 with the Branson Meadows, and the county and has been paying 50% of the amount that's been generated by the business the TIF legislation that the state enacted calls for 50% of what the business pays and not 50% of what you receive. And so anyway, that's been a process that's been in place now for basically 20 years. The second point would be that the current process was designed to conform with the representations that were made to the bondholders. So when you develop a TIF, what happens is you wind up getting a contractor or a developer, would be a better way of saying it, comes in, wants to develop a particular area, and so there's various representations are made to that in that project, and so you do pro formas and you estimate the amount of monies that would be coming in. From the various government entities, and so you're counting on that 50% so it's a pro forma that way. So anyway, that's, you know, it's a key point there with the bondholders. And we've gone through this process with the county before, back in 2011, and I've attached it with the materials that you have there. Is a copy of that, at least the document we had from the bond council in terms of going through that back at that point in time. And, you know, so we're concerned about, you know, potential ramifications of changing the process. So anyway, that's that's basically the four things we'd like to bring to your attention. And, you know, whatever questions you may have, and I don't know if Jamie has anything you want to add at this point or not. Anything I may have?
I think you figured it out.
Okay. I want you to know that Carl and I are good friends. We've been doing this for a long time, and we just have a disagreement here. I believe that we should not be paying on that 1%. My rationale for that is it is not considered revenue for the county. Does the state hold an administrative fee out of your sales tax also?
Yes, but we still pay on the basis of what the businesses pay. So we're getting, well, actually at Branson Landing, you know, you can negotiate an agreement with a developer, and we actually give 100%. So we're actually giving 101%, I'd say, on Branson Landing. And then at Branson Hills, we're giving the full 50%. So we're giving more than what we actually receive in tax revenue.
And that is by agreement with your
thing. That's correct.
We've done a lot of research with the different counties throughout the state, and I found one county that was only paying a portion, or that was only paying on the 50% rather than 49%. When I brought that to their attention, they actually changed that also. That happened back in 2011. Newton County was that way. All the other counties only pay on what revenue they bring in. I know there's some discrepancies there, but we think we've been doing it all wrong all along. I did back in 2011. I still feel like that if we paid on the 1%, it would be not according to what should be done.
I'm Donna Millian. We haven't met before, Carl. It's nice to meet you, and hi, Jamie. We've met before. It's been a long time. It's good to see you both. And I agree with Rick. We have no issue with the city of Branson. We just disagree on this process. But I will say that I did make some phone calls this last week and spoke to different counties like Boone and Buchanan and Camden County, Cass County, and Platt County. And when I got to Platt County, I found that the gentleman I was talking to was also an attorney. And he is going to talk to the Treasurer's Association. By the way, all of those are distributing 50% after the 1% is taken by the state. So all of them are in agreement with the process we believe is correct. And so then I talked to this attorney. His name is Rob Willard. He's also the treasurer for their county. He is concerned that we have two different opinions from the same firm, that being Gilmore and Bell. You have an opinion from Rick McConnell from 2011. And then we have a transcript, which I did forward to you, Carl, in which Mark Grime has an opposite opinion. We did, that being Sheila Wyatt, contacted Mr. Grime and asked him to give us a written opinion based on the training session he had provided to the collectors. That would be all the collectors across the state of Missouri. And he had a completely different opinion than Mr. McConnell. We asked him to give us a written opinion, and he would not do that because his associate was giving an opposite opinion of what he had. So clearly within the state itself, there are different counties who have a different interpretation. Also, I wanted to bring it to your attention that the collector's office is collecting a fee and has a legal right to collect a fee on that TIF district distribution. So you are getting less than 50%. You're receiving less than 50% now on your real estate. Am I saying that correct, Mrs. Wyatt?
Per statute.
So it'll be that same statute that allows the state to take their 1% is just as legal as those statutes that allow the collector to keep her fees. I believe it would be unethical for us to give you more than 50%. If you read Chapter 99 strictly, it says that the TIF district will receive 50%. Well, I believe in implied law, that means the entity that is coming from also would receive 50%. If the state has a legal right to take 1%, then they have a legal right to take 1% from your 50% as well as 1% from ours. Currently, we are giving you 50% and the county is only receiving 48%, which I think just by reading Chapter 99, now attorneys may disagree with me and that's fine, but that is my opinion, that we should both be treated equally, not one, that the TIF does not give one entity more authority than the other entity. And I also believe that we have an issue statewide with this many counties that are disagreeing and this many attorneys. I did get the name of several attorneys. This many people that are disagreeing with that, that there is a true concern. So Mr. Rob Willard is going to approach the Treasurers Association to see if they will come up with a written opinion and has asked me to relay to our commission that they ask MAC to get a legal opinion since this could impact so many counties across the state. As I think in both opinions, we have seen that there has been no case law specifically on this. There has been a case law in St. Francis County that addressed a county that was asking for 4% that was not written into the TIF law, was not written into the TIF agreements, and they said they could not collect that. But that same opinion also said that if there are any statutory fees allowed to be collected, they could be collected. That the 4% being taken by St. Francis was not either written into the TIF agreement and it was not statutory. So I believe I agree with Mr. Finley. I think it is unethical and immoral for us to continue with the same process now that we've made these discoveries and talked to so many counties.
Well, there's been no case law on this. I mean, Rick and I have visited with that. So, I mean, it's an interesting point. I mean, I don't, you know, you can sit, you know, make common sense would say that you should be paid after they kept the 1%, but as we all know, in government, some a lot of things don't make sense in terms of the way laws get passed, et cetera. So we think it's being done correctly, but obviously, what agreeing with you, Donna, is that perhaps there should be something go to the Attorney General's office, since you got two different statutes that conceivably could be in conflict, and have them make a ruling on it.
I mean, yes, we need to harmonize the statutes,
that would,
I agree.
That would take care of the issue, is one approach to
you
that.
You did explain to the commission in your email to them that there was a precedent set in the process that we're currently using. However, as we've been researching old TIF documents, we found at one time that there were fees being taken out of the TIF district, and there was a disagreement between the City of Branson and Teeny County, and at one time that process stopped. But so the precedent has been changed more than once. There were fees being taken out that went to the collector and to the clerk many, many years ago, back, I believe, in the early 90s. That process, and even to the assessor, and we found out when that was stopped. And then later on, of course, in 2011, the process was changed again, and here we are again. So there is no legal precedent. There is a precedent in the way it's been handled, but it has been changed more than once.
We had the Missouri Department of Economic Development. You know, obviously they participated in the Branson Landing TIF, and so they came in and did an audit way back when. That pretty quick after the after established. I'm struggling a little bit in terms of which year, and whether it's 2006, 7, or 8. Time has a way of getting by as you get older.
Why'd you look at me when you said
that?
I didn't look at
you. I'm so right there. Yeah, but I think I'm right. But anyway, they thought we were doing, you know, they had no problem with our process on that. And then we have external auditors that come in each year. In fact, we're just literally, you know, Jamie's been wrapped up with an audit right now, and they look at the process. So, we haven't had any problems in terms of an external audit on anything that we've been doing. So,
Carl,
I don't think the question is if it's illegal or not according to statute or not this or not that. Everything that I'm gathering is you guys are collecting your taxes. Let's say it's $100,000. When it gets back to us, we're only receiving 49%. We're receiving $49,000, but we're still giving you $50,000.
That's correct.
And Carl, when you said it just makes sense, one of the phone calls I made to other counties when I was the city figured it for the county didn't even figure it. And when I asked the lady how she figured it, she said she figured it that way. And I said, well, do you have any statutory standing? And she said, no, but it just makes sense, just like you did. So I don't know what you want to do, but our commission needs enough information. Would it be amenable to Branson right now if they said, hey, pay on the 99%, half of the 99%, and then get, you guys could go get an attorney's opinion. If it was different, then we could pay the rest of that later.
We already have an attorney's opinion.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about an attorney's opinion. I'm talking about the attorney general's opinion.
Judgment, yeah. Possibly.
I think that's something we could do as a group, if you guys wanted to.
I think the Treasurer's Association is probably going to go out and get an opinion.
I thought only certain people can actually ask for an attorney general opinion, one of them being a prosecuting attorney. I mean, we just can't go say, hey, we want an opinion, can we? How does that work?
I'm not sure, Brandon. Okay. Yeah. But I believe that when I...
So the commission can ask for one.
The prosecuting attorney or the commission
can ask for...
The legislator
can ask for one. Okay. I say, I know that not just anybody can go, hey, we want an opinion on this. So I don't know what in the municipal side, you know, but it might be something that might be something we need to look into.
I know when I visited with Carl, he was concerned because they did have some payments that were due, and they needed, you know, this $300,000. He said it would be helpful. Now, I don't know whether that's amenable to the county or anything, but it would be helpful if they got paid on these last 2 months. And I don't like seeing payments not made. I would prefer to pay, withholding the 1% pay, and then keep that in our funds. As Danny said something about an escrow, but I think we just keep it in our funds so that we could pay that later if that was determined that was the proper way or whatever.
Over the course of a year, what does that 1% actually end up being?
Brandon, you see it on your TIF payment about every month, and it averages about $2,000 a month.
So about $25,000 a year, roughly?
It would be around $25,000, which is enough. I guess in question. Mm-hmm.
The reason I asked Rick this morning about a escrow account, and I didn't know whether the county could put anything in escrow or not, was that I felt like the city would feel more comfortable with that. We could go ahead and make the payments and then keep the money in an account. If it was an escrow account, well, then it would be something that after the opinion came in one way or the other, we could put it in the county's funds, or we could issue it to the city, however the legal opinion came in. But
I don't think there's any reason for an escrow account. I think probably we just need to keep it in our county funds, and then when we come budget time, if it still hadn't been settled, we need to make sure that it was set aside so that it was not part of our budgeted expenses.
Because it'll be in the budget. Mm-hmm. In that line, it'll be sitting there waiting to be expended.
Uh-huh. That's in the future. It's not there now.
Right.
So I don't know. My question would be, and I don't know, that might be something we'd ask Frank or ask someone else, if we could have an escrow account that made the city feel comfortable and made us.
And I don't see any reason for the escrow account. If they don't feel comfortable with us, they're not going to feel comfortable with us holding an escrow account either. I think they're comfortable with us. I don't see any reason for an escrow account.
I don't understand. Go ahead, Jane. I don't know what difference between an escrow account and the other. But
I tend to agree with Rick on this. I mean, it's $25,000, so in the grand scheme of things, it can be a lot of money. So just as long as we know, you know, an escrow account is built for just setting aside, making sure those funds are available. So I understand that concept as well. But just as long as we are on the same page here, that we know that it's being considered and it's not being thrown out, that it's not going to be paid, I think we would be comfortable with that at this point. And we're certainly glad to work with you if you need an attorney general's opinion. We don't have any problem with that. We have bond counsel opinion, and we feel like we've been doing it correctly. I know that other counties, and I completely understand that's benchmarking against what you've got, and we do that quite a bit. So I understand the approach that you've taken. However, TIFs are different all across the state, and I've got quite a bit of experience in the TIF area. So we do annual TIF reports, five-year TIF reports that are reviewed by many. So it is still the city's stance that we have been and are currently doing it correctly based on how the businesses pay, not based on what we receive. And Branson, we're not asking the county to do anything that we aren't currently doing ourselves. So certainly escrow or not escrow, if you tell us that you're going to, we're going to check into it. We're all on the same page. I think we have good faith that you will take care of it if the opinion is set.
Jamie, are you making up for that person who's just being withheld by the collector's office?
On the real estate?
Mm-hmm.
No, the real estate is different, and we've talked to the bond council about that. It is handled differently, but we are on the sales tax. We are making up for that.
Could you give me the statutes or the opinion that allows that to be different? I don't see anything in law that would make those fee laws for the collector's office to be collected any different than the state. If you had an opinion, that would be great.
Certainly. I'm just going off of what Gilmore and Bell and we have discussed, so I can get you that just the same way that you're planning on getting us the other information as well.
Sure, that would be great.
Jamie, I think, do you get the reports that she does?
I don't believe so.
The annual TIF reports?
Yeah, and I think that we're supposed to be getting those, and I asked her if she had and said she didn't, so you might want to try to make sure we get a copy of those if you would.
Okay, we publish those. They're on our site, and they're also, we publish those with Emma as well, so you can go out there.
Email them to the clerk so she has a copy.
Oh, that's no problem. I don't have a problem doing that.
Jamie, yeah. can you explain, so with what you guys withhold, or with what's withheld, you guys still pay out X amount, or you still pay out the same percentage?
Yeah.
Can you go ahead and explain that to us?
Well, I guess what we're asking you to do is pay on the 50% or the 100%. So is that what you're asking?
Well, what do you guys, whenever we give you the funds, and you said the bondholders and all that, explain that whole process.
So for the TIF process for Branson for the sales, so it's handled the same way we're asking you all to do. So if the state withholds the 1%, we still pay out the 50, if that's what you're asking. The landing is what you call a super TIF. So it's 100%. So everything that comes in goes straight out, plus we pay 100%. So if they're withholding the 1% for the landing, we pay that out.
And you pay that out to whom?
We pay that out to trustees. It goes to our trustees for our bond, and then it goes to those bond payments. So we're basically a flow-through, if you will. When the money comes in around the 10th to the 15th of every month, we just pay it back to our trustee. She then goes in and pays it to the proper accounts for those TIFs.
Everything that comes in a month has to be paid out the same month. That's when they're
actually you're actually having to supplement those funds.
Yeah, by agreement they pay quite a bit more than what comes in.
So for example, if you don't pay, not say you, but any other entity doesn't pay timely, we basically have to make up those dollars.
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the 1% again. Whatever's withheld coming to you guys,
we pay it.
You go ahead and make up that 1% whenever you pay it on to your trustees.
And yes, and that's based on the original agreement. So, and then it goes to the trustee, as Carl said, and then we go to our bond payments.
And that is an agreement between Branson and the bondholder. So, not between Taney County and the bondholder or anything. I don't believe it's signed on there. But that's one reason that Brandon and I feel like we need to make those payments rather than continue to withhold. Even if we withhold the 1%, that will at least put them in a more viable position to pay those bonds.
Yeah, we'll actually have to, because of their external auditors and everything else, we will continue. We'll just have to break out that 1% and show that made a little bit different, so we're in balance on that 1%. That's quoted in either an escrow or other, however you all choose to do that. So that way we're in sync, so then when that decision's made, then go that way. You know what I'm saying? So we need to make sure we're in sync on it. I mean, I hate to go all of a sudden and try to do a reconciliation. It may take them a year for the Attorney General, as I understand it, when they get to these type of opinions, they may have a lot of these. And you just don't know the timing, how long it's going to take them to get something like this resolved.
I think the last time we paid, withheld the 1% and paid for a while that way, it was several months before the commission changed their mind and decided to do that. And we had to together figure that back, and it was kind of a pain. I think probably having that experience behind us, we will do a better job of tracking it this time.
Okay. Frank, do you have any input?
I have an opinion, but the fact of the matter is, I've listened to the speakers, both for the county and the city of Branson, and they clearly have read up on this. I have nothing to add to what they've said. The case law is not clear on it. It has not decided the very question that's on the table today. And in the absence of a case law decision, you've either got to work it out between yourselves or you go to some authority that'll get you hopefully a quick answer, like the Attorney General's office.
Yeah, I don't think the question, and with me, the question's never been if you guys are doing something wrong or not, or if it's been presented incorrectly. I mean, that's never been, like, you guys are right, and I think what they're coming up with is also right, and we get the privilege of making somebody mad.
I guess, Brandon, it's very possible that the city should be paying on 1% because they've done that by agreement, and the county should not because the county wasn't involved in the agreement. That's a possibility, obviously.
Well, then I see this conclusion to this meeting as you present a bill of this $339,095.28 minus the 1%, and the city of Branson will receive their funds then.
We've got the emails, and Rick and I will sit down today and try and come up with that amount and then put it through the accounts payable process.
That's
all right with
the
gentleman.
That's what I'm saying. That's
can it be, do you guys, if it's put on accounts payable for next Monday, is that all right?
Oh, is it, yes, if we get, that'd be great.
We can do that.
I don't know if it needs to be sooner.
No, as long as it's next week, we'll be okay.
But my statement was in the conclusion of this meeting, because we don't have anything else to discuss. There's two opinions and an Attorney General's opinion, which will come down at that time. The 1% will either be held or it will be released. So that's the way I see this conversation. We can hash back and forth
right.
All we want to, but it has no meaning until we come to that.
Make one final observation. I don't think either approach is wrong, okay, as such. I mean, common sense. But again, we've been doing it this way for an extended period of time. Obviously, the city would like for it to continue, but nevertheless, that was my only point I wanted to make.
Right, and to say this is a statewide deal that needs to be answered. It should be answered for a statewide issue, not for the city of Branson and Taney County, but all the other counties that are involved in TIFs. They should have a resolve to what we're talking about. And so that's the reason it should be handled. I think it should be handled through our Missouri Association of Counties, and they should be the ones sent for the opinion, because there's all sorts of things being done two different ways. So that's the way I feel about it, that it should be.
That's a good observation. I mean, yeah. Someone has to initiate it.
Right. And I think it'd be quicker through the Missouri Association of Counties than it would be if we asked for an opinion.
Well, that'll be up to you gentlemen to decide on that. I appreciate your time today. It was so nice to meet both of you. Hope we can come to a resolve very soon.
I just wanted to add one other thing. It was a very good point. Missouri Municipal League, I will approach them as well because they do a lot. And so I'll ask them to see what they can get with the Attorney General. So we'll work on our side as well. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Do we need to make a motion on this? Okay, we have next on the agenda the Missouri Career Center Youth Program. Come on up. Either way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Joe Van Winkle. I'm with the Missouri Career Center in Springfield. I'm with our youth department. Today we're going to be talking about our summer jobs program. Sorry. And we did have a PowerPoint, but I did give everyone a handout copy of that. So our intention right now, I'll just go ahead and go over it with you. Ultimately, this meeting today is going to be able to make sure that we have the county's approval, as well as seeing if the county has any referrals for any leads that we may have for our youth participants as well. So just to go over it, the summer jobs program was made available by the Missouri Department, State of Missouri Division of Workforce, and it was through TANF funds. Now, there's only a couple qualifications about the program. Our program details, it's 16 to 24 is our age range, and they just have to be under the 185% of federal poverty. So as an example, a family of four is about $3,000 for their income, which most youth would qualify for that program. If they're not related by blood, marriage, or adoption, they would also qualify as a family of one if they have no income as well. If they have an income of family of one, I believe it's
$1,800.
So as a family of one, they would easily qualify for that. The target right now, it's designed to encourage and participant learn and understand and manage their career goals and options, as well as develop the social skills and a maturity level that will help them achieve their positive interactions and get them in the workforce. The program starts on May 1st, so it's coming up quickly, so that's why we're getting all of our meetings set. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to place 135 youth participants in the Ozark region, so all seven counties, including Taney, Stone, Dallas, all of them. And what's going to happen is we're going to get, of those youth, we're trying to get them 240 hours of work experience that we pay them for, so the employer's not out of pocket on that. With $8 an hour pay, we pay them. We also cover their insurance and liability workman's compensation as well. What we do is we actually set up a training plan with the youth. So as an example, I'm with Stone and Taney in Christian County. That's who the participants that I'm going to be taking care of. So we would actually meet with them on an individual basis and set up what their career goals are to get them set up in the workforce, because most teenagers nowadays don't necessarily have a job and they don't have that want to try to find something. So that's what our goal is, try to get them set with that. We're going to build a work history. They're going to develop their work ethic, as well as gaining valuable career experience and a relationship with employers that they can carry on with. To give you an example, we have a couple youth in Springfield that we're getting ready to place, and they were interested in doing historian and military. And so what we were able to do is we were able to get on with the Air and Military Museum. We've got them in talks right now. So we're trying to pair them up as best we can with what the youth actually want to do, instead of going to McDonald's, signing them up, so forth like that. We have worksite objectives that we go through with the employer. We actually have two separate packets. We have an employer packet and a youth packet that we'll hand out. There are two separate PowerPoints as well. The employer will go through an orientation, as will the participant. To give an example about the employer packet, it contains everything from OSHA, child labor laws, all of the worksite agreement, like we don't allow any kind of alcoholic establishments that have any kind of alcoholic beverages, pools, or anything like that. So we're mainly trying to get into, like, you know, careers like, as an example, welding, mechanics. We have, like I said, historians, libraries, different areas that we're looking into. And what we do is we set up a plan, not only with the youth participant, but also with the actual employer to say, okay, this is what they're going to do, because not every participant's going to start out what exactly they want to do. They're not going to start welding. They're going to start cleaning shops, stuff like that. And then they'll slowly get up to that spot. And another thing that we're going to do is we actually provide timesheets for the actual youth participant and the employer, so they don't have to worry about anything on their end. On the timesheet, there's going to be an evaluation that we have them do as well to make sure that they do evaluate them. And if there's anything that can be improved that needs progress in there, that will also be touched. Let's see. I'm going to let Ruth Ann touch on the youth packet real quick as well, because Ruth Ann is also working with me. So
the youth packet basically just, it's where we sit down with the kid and see what their interests are, like if they're interested in mechanics or law enforcement or anything like that. And it's just kind of, we get to know the kid a little better so we can figure out where they want to be placed. We don't place any kid further than 20 miles away from their home. And if they need any help with transportation or, like, we have gas cards and things like that, we can help them get assistance so they're not late for work and whatnot. Really, that's about it in the youth packet. So
the youth packet,
pretty simple.
Very similar to the employer packet in the aspect, except the youth packet doesn't have all the OSHA and everything like that. Ultimately, like I said, whenever we first began this meeting, we're trying to see, make sure the county approves of the program that we're trying to get involved with our youth participants. And we're also trying to see if you have any referrals that are from reputable businesses as well, even by word of mouth after the meeting, if anything comes up. Other than that, though, I mean, that's just the bare bones of our program. We did have a PowerPoint, like I said, that would be a little bit more in-depth that we'd follow, but this is just a handout of one of the commissioner PowerPoints that we'd go over just for a brief summary. Do you have any questions about the program at all?
Do you have work sites here in Taney County?
We do have, we just signed on Classic Motor Inn in Branson. And let's see, Eagle Eye, we also have them signed on. We have a couple other meetings that we've set. I don't know if the commission is familiar with Beef Jerky Outlet, and I believe on the landing. We've signed up their Springfield office, and we're waiting to see about their Branson office. So right now, the hardest places to get, I mean, in all honesty, Greene County is going to be a plethora of businesses. But with Taney and Stone and Polk and Webster and Dallas and Christian, all of those we're really trying to focus on as well, because we don't want to just focus on Greene County. We want to focus as much energy as we do on Greene County as we do on Stone and Taney and everyone else. So that's why we mainly also come to get, if you have information on that as well, just to kind of reach out and see if we can partner at all with getting employers set up as well.
I think that, do you know how many kids participated last year?
We have
in Taney County?
That's a very good question. We have a work experience program. The summer jobs program has come back since, this is the first time it's back since about 2009, because the funds weren't available. We had TANF funds, like I said, were able to actually sponsor this program too. So with our work experience program that we have year round, it's almost the same guidelines, just a little bit different for qualification. We have, let's see, did Jen give you those numbers at all? No. I can tell you, I know it's at least, because we have a couple people in the office that do work with Stone and Taney as well as a job developer that goes throughout the Ozark region. So I don't have an exact statistic, but I do know it's at least 24, but we want to make that number larger.
Sure.
Because it'll impact, you know, not only is it going to impact the economy, it's going to benefit them, and it's going to keep them in the area getting their work experience going.
Have you checked with, I can think of two that possibly would be great that are associated with the county. One of them would be the Missouri Extension Council in the office down there. They need some assistance, and that would be a great experience for some young person. And you've got an age group of up to 24, which might be very handy for them. And then also, our historical society down here, if they have constant filing of documents and stuff. So the historical society, the extension council, there might be such a thing as checking with Randy on road and bridge. I don't know exactly how in depth somebody might want to get in that, but any kind of experience that a young person had with being out and learning what a workforce is would be worth participation in. So that might be something that you could check with. We have summer programs and summer help that we use anyway, so if someone wanted to understand the responsibility of working with R&B, any of the elected officials that might need some filing that wanted to take on such a task as this.
Okay.
This is beneficial to whoever the employer is, plus it's great benefit to the youth that you're trying to get the job for.
Absolutely. And we don't, one thing I didn't mention, after 240 hours is up, we have another work experience program. If they haven't set up in that, they could potentially repeat that 240 hours in that program afterwards. So there is the potential to actually have doubled the time. If they've already done it, it's at the employer's discretion if they want to hire. They don't have to. All we do is if they do hire, let us know. If they don't, we'll find them somewhere else, you know. It's just a key building block to get them to success, because most teenagers nowadays are wanting to text, play games, not do much, you know. And we don't want them to just do, you know, rudimentary tasks. We want them to get involved in a career that will actually sustain them in the economy. So,
another resource you might consider on the west side of the county would be the human resources at the city of Branson.
Okay.
They have lots of different departments over there that could probably use some help.
Excellent.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I did want to mention, if you flip on the back of your information here, does anyone have no phone numbers on their contact information? Does it have phone numbers published on that?
I've got them.
You have phone numbers on yours as well? Or is it just 417-?
I have numbers on the last page.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
The last, under contact information.
Yeah, I've got the numbers.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because there have been some copies that our administrator has actually put in that don't have any in there.
Okay.
So I just wanted to ensure that we did have copies that have information. Chris Hollenbeck is our program coordinator. He is over all of the Ozark region. I myself am in charge of Stone, Taney, and Christian. And then Ruth Ann.
Dallas, Polk, and Webster.
And then we have Cindy, who is going to be in charge of Green alone. In all honesty, we all are working together. We're not necessarily territorying on it, to be specific. But as you can see, myself and Ruth Ann, we've been going to commissioner meetings all last week, and this week we've got them all scheduled. And we also have school meetings as well. We're doing everything we can to try to reach out to the youth before the program starts. And our biggest obstacle right now is with the youth. They're in that moment at school where they've got all their testing going on, so it's a little bit difficult. So we're doing lunch visits and everything like that. So, I mean, if you know of any youth as well in that age range that you think would be a good fit, you can contact any one of us, myself, Ruth Ann, or Cindy. And if you have any specific program questions, you can always contact Chris. He's always available. If he's not there, you can leave a message. But definitely, I mean, I appreciate all the referrals that the commission has been able to give to us.
You can also contact the Taney County Juvenile Office.
Okay.
They may have some 16-year-olds that need to be employed. And
okay. That'll be a good lead. Thank you. And then if you find anything else out as well, you know, just by word of mouth.
Oh. Have you spoken with the Taney County Partnership, that's the Economic Development Engine for the county?
We have not yet.
I know that Jonas Argus, the leader of that group, he is focused on workforce development. He's been working with the schools on trying to get some accreditation and different things. And you guys might have some very shared goals.
Okay, absolutely. And just something to end on, you know, one of the biggest things on there is the impact of the program. The 16.1%, if anyone's familiar with Merrick's website, that's what our Ozark region for unemployment is for the youth sector. Pretty much three times what the adult is. Adults right now are 5.5. So 16.1 is not a good jump going into the program, because that's just going to make the adult climb whenever it gets up to that rate, that age limit. So we're doing everything we can to try to help them get placed to better not only themselves but the economy and get that experience altogether, though.
This is streaming across the web, and we also have mm-hmm. all the news media here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that probably should take place is how much paperwork is involved for the employer?
The employer? Absolutely.
Versus, are you guys responsible for that? I heard you talk about insurance and workman's comp and all those things.
Are Go ahead,
you responsible for the paperwork?
The employer packet only, the real thing they have to fill out is about probably four or five papers, and most of them are just signatures. There's only one form that really requires any work, and that's just listing what the duties are. And we'll even fill that out for them, and all they'll have to do is sign it. And as far as, like, we do the I-9 forms, the E-Verify, all the taxes, because we do their salary, their pay. So we take care of pretty much everything. All they're responsible for is training them and giving them the experience.
And the timesheets.
Right? Yes.
Yeah, because we provide the timesheets. And the timesheets, they'll just be filled out. We pick them up every other Monday. So every 2 Mondays, we'll pick them up, literally.
One thing that we also wanted to go over as well, considering the employer packet, nothing is contractual. It's all an agreement. At any point, the employer can withdraw. They don't have to be stuck. And another key thing as well to think about that a lot of employers aren't aware of, the interview process is still the same. All we ask is that we can escort the youth there, you know, meet there and say, hey, this is what's going on. If the employer feels it's a good fit, we sit down, employer, ourselves, and participant, and we make a plan. This is what you're going to be doing. This is how it's going to be done, and this is where you're going to be able to get there from. So literally, that's all it is. The youth packet, they sign, they fill out a 4-page intake form, and we just verify, you know, their identity, birth certificate, social, driver's license if they have one, or non-driver's license, just basic items like that. But other than that, though, employer packet's very simple. We leave them with every county that in the Ozark region, we have our workman's comp information. All that contact information for the local areas is in there. So what we can do, if you'd like, we're going to be coming back down next weekend. I can drop a couple packets off for the commission if you'd like to have a couple packets then. So that way you can look at them and everything.
Or drop them off at our human resources.
Yeah, I can do that. Okay. Absolutely. And if there's any other questions that are going to be there, you can feel free to contact us at any time because we're always available. And then if some reason we're out of the office unavailable, leave a message. We'll get back to you by the end of the day because we're always back by 5 o'clock. So.
Okay.
But, I mean, we appreciate the opportunity to present in front of you. Was there anything else?
So.
Excellent.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck. Good luck.
Let's see, we have MoDOT monthly update.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
This chair is low today. I thought I would catch you up on what we've got going on the construction side of things, first of all. We have 3 or 4 different things going this summer. We've got a safety project that we're going to be doing on 65 at the curves near Saddlebrook. We're adding some high-friction surface treatment because we continue to have accidents on those curves as people come down the hill. You know, we put big chevrons up and lots of warnings, and we still have issues. So we're adding a high-friction surface treatment that will hopefully give people more traction whenever they're approaching those curves and hopefully prevent people leaving the road. So as far as maintenance overlays, we've got a couple of chip seals scheduled for this summer. One of those is on 76 all the way from Kissimmee Mill all the way to Douglas County, basically. And then the other is in Branson on 376, the little connector route that goes from Shepherd of the Hills over to 265. And those will both be done this summer. I think those will probably start towards the end of May. I don't have a schedule yet on the safety project at Saddlebrook. So. And then also we've got some overlays on 160 and 125 to correct the overlay issue we had several years ago. We finally were able to budget some funding to do some corrections to those. And so that will be 160, I think, basically from Kissimmee Mill to 125. And then 125 will be all the way from basically Bradleyville to the state line, the state park there. The section of 160 east of 125 will actually be, and they may have already done it last year, I don't know, would actually be like a slurry seal. It's just like a fancy fog seal. So those two will be done this summer, but we haven't met with the contractor yet to get a schedule from them. So about the only one I know that, and that's not for sure, but the chip seals are supposed to be scheduled towards the end of May. That is a district-wide contract, so they may choose to start on the different side of the district, but right now they're telling us they're going to start with those down in the Taney County area. So, and that's it for construction. Obviously, we've got the replacement of the bridge out here at Forsyth on 76 coming up in 2017. That's still on schedule. So nothing has changed there. And I think that's about it for all of our commitments in this area presently. I wanted to let you know that, and you probably heard, we were supporting funding for Missouri's roadways through a proposed Senate bill that was the 2+2+2. It was sponsored by Senator Libla. That bill basically became just 2 cents because Senator Libla was concerned about it getting held up in the Senate. I'm told that even at the 2 cents, they've had filibustering. There's been threats of holding it up. So we don't hold a lot of hope that it's going to make it through the Senate, but we continue to monitor that and hope that something can get done. We do face that funding shortfall. That's not going to change. In 2017, we will not be able to match federal funds. You know, legislatively, it's not looking good right now. So we will probably have some federal funds that we won't be able to match. Where it goes from there will still be decided. There's different scenarios. If we can't match the federal funds in state, basically those funds can become eligible for other states to grab up if they've got the matching funds. There's also talk that municipalities that had funding available could do the match and just grab the money themselves, but I'm not sure what direction that will go. We had very high hopes that it would be solved and we wouldn't have to go that route, but if it doesn't get solved this legislative session, we'll have to start looking at those avenues and see what happens. We have put together a new feature on our website for people that want to continue monitoring the condition of Missouri roads and bridges and also the developments on any efforts to provide funding for our Missouri roads. It's called the 325 report, and it's, you know, right at the top of the page when you go to MoDOT.org. So that's a good source for seeing what the latest and greatest news is on, you know, road conditions, bridge closures, any legislative efforts or statewide efforts that are being made to provide funding for the roadways. So I don't have much else to report. We a lot of gloom and doom and not a lot of good stuff coming from us right now, so unfortunately.
Got a question for you.
Yes.
No.
Really?
You do? I'd be very disappointed if he doesn't have at least one question.
The curve on by T Highway that's on 76 there where it's three lanes.
Where we added the turn lane?
Mm-hmm. Not that turn lane. As you go around the corner and head to Branson, there's three lanes there also.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And you were talking about that surface that you were going to put down on those other roads. I can't tell you the number of people that spent a complete circle in that area over there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know whether that might be something that you could throw in your maintenance portion to put maybe put that sticky seal down.
It's something that's done by contract, and with the move to the 325 plan this spring, 76 is not one of the primary routes. The only primary routes in Taney County would be 65 and 160. It's the same way with the majority, you know, all the other counties are in the same boat. We basically have one north-south and one east-west roughly route per county, and that's what we're down to, 8,000 miles of roadway.
Don't hurt to request it, though, does it?
I do not agree with you, and I will make sure that, or do not disagree with you, let me put it that way.
The other thing that I want
to... I don't agree with him a lot.
So
it's okay, then.
One thing that I wondered about is, you were talking about matching funds. Mm-hmm. If the state has a MoDOT budget, then Are there other resources throughout the state that would come into play if the MoDOT budgeting couldn't reach the federal match?
There has been discussions, and mainly the discussions I've heard have come from the MPOs, which there are three MPOs in the state that have counties and cities that have tax dollars, transportation, you know, related tax dollars that have traditionally done the cost match or cost share program in the past whenever we had it available. They have been asking a lot of questions about could they do the match to get the 80% of the federal funds. And as far as I know, that could happen. The problem there is, you know, we have a formula that distributes all of the federal and state funds throughout the districts, the seven districts in the state. If we have certain entities that just step up with funding, I'm not sure how that's all going to get sorted out, because it basically is going to be the haves and the have-nots. If you've got money and you can step up and make the match, then, you know, you could possibly have access to those federal dollars. But how we're going to sort that out, I don't know. We were hoping to really avoid that, because if that's the conclusion you leap to, then, like I said, you end up with cities, mainly probably cities that would reap the benefits, and nothing wrong with that, but you basically create these islands of funding, and then everybody else doesn't get anything, because we can't make the match.
That's the reason I thought it would be better if the state could come up with the funding.
That's what we're hoping, yes.
With the amount of money that was held back by the dollar amount held back by the governor, I just wondered if any of those funds could be approached.
It would have to be by, they would have to do something this legislative session, because right now all of our funding comes through the state road trust fund.
Right.
And so none of our funding for roads comes from general revenue. We do get a little bit of general revenue for like ports and airports and things like that, but none for roads.
Right, and so that's the question. If it's an 80% match, then it looks to me like it'd be a good deal for the state to step up and supply part of the 20%, because you've got part of it.
Yeah.
And to go ahead and make this happen. So that's my only question. So.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, if we go to general revenue, then, you know, it would make sense to match the federal, but I'm not a legislator. I cannot make those decisions about if you bring that out of general revenue, who's not going to get the money that goes to funding the roads, because you aren't generating any more revenue, so it's basically being taken away from somebody. So we had really hoped to find a improved revenue source, so that, you know, we haven't raised gas taxes since 1992. The buying power of the 17 cents in 1992, you go to current standards, that's about 8 cents. So we're less than half the buying power that we had back in 1992. You know, general revenue would be a patch, and that would be about all you could call it, I guess, would be a patch. It's not a funding solution, I don't believe. And we need close to, you know, the first year, 2017, will be a smaller patch. We're talking about $45, $50 million. But beyond that, then it jumps up to $160 million to meet our needs. So where they might consider a one-year patch, that would be up to the legislature. We've got to find a funding solution for our roads.
I should know this, but I don't. The interstate roads, do the federal people have responsibility on that? Because I had a big argument on the Branson Bridge over here whenever it was there, and I said it should have been funded by the federal dollars that were sent to the state, and ended up getting the money through a federal process.
We choose to fund it statewide through a separate pool of funds, but as far as I know, that pool still is 80-20. There isn't money that comes directly to us that's earmarked for the interstates. There's probably some expectation, obviously, from the feds to focus on the interstate, but they don't do like 100% funding on the interstate, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. Well, I went to St. Louis a couple of weeks ago, and the 44 needs it.
The urban areas are a challenge because of all the truck traffic and the loading on them, and just getting contracts out and getting them repaired, because most of that repair has to happen at night, just for the traffic volumes.
Okay. Anything else?
Have they said why they're filibustering and threatening and all those things? Or
it just comes down to taxation. I think we've got some senators that are just adamantly opposed to any form of taxation. So I don't think it would matter what it was, to be honest.
So at the Missouri Association of Counties, I think they chose to support it. Did they not?
We have overwhelming support from all municipal forms of government, county forms of government, Farm Bureau is on board, Chambers of Commerce have lobbied. We've got support from all areas.
I think MAC is supporting that. I've read something on it.
Yeah. We've got a lot of entities that maybe didn't feel comfortable when the legislature pushed the Amendment 7 through to the people, right, and it was a sales tax. A lot of those entities that weren't comfortable with a sales tax were on board for a gas tax, which was being proposed, and just can't seem to make it out of the Senate, so unfortunately.
If there was a little regulation on the price, that would really help. If somehow there could be a fuel tax passed, but the regulation on the dollar amount that could be capped at some reasonable rate, instead of not knowing whenever you buy a gallon of gas whether it's going to be $2.19 or it's going to be close to $4, that is the problem with the sales tax. People's opinion.
Now, we don't have sales tax on gas. We have a fixed excise tax. That doesn't change. You can pay $4 a gallon for gas, and you're still paying 17 cents in Missouri tax. You can pay $2 for gas, and you're still paying 17 cents. We don't have any control over free enterprise, and I'm not even going to go there on regulating the gas industry and how much they charge for fuel. So. But it is, it's basically a flat fee per gallon.
It was a 2 cent. What was the two plus two plus two?
The 2 plus 2 plus 2 was going to raise gas tax by 6 cents eventually over a 3-year period. And that was to keep it within the Hancock Amendment. Because that was going to raise about $95,000 each, 2 cents. Of that, we would have got 70%, which would have provided our patch that first year, the 2017 year that we need the about $45 million. So that would have taken care of that. And then as our need increased, that gap increased, that 2 cents would have filled. You know, when you get up to 6 cents, that would have taken care of the 160.
So it would have taken the 17 cents eventually up to a 23 cent.
Yes, it would have. And that would have put us still below
the average.
National average, and still well below most of our surrounding states. I think Oklahoma would be the exception because they're the same as us right now at 17, but they have toll roads.
Right.
So that's how they take care of a lot of their
25. What's Arkansas's?
I would have to look it up right now, but I know it's either 24 or 25. And then they passed a half cent sales tax, so they've got sales tax that was focused towards specific projects. Iowa just passed a 10 cent gas tax increase. So they're up over 30 cents. I'm not sure if it's 32 or where they're at, but and it was overwhelmingly supported by all House, Senate, governor signed it the same day. Hmm. So I think there's a lot of our surrounding neighbors that are recognizing the need, and we are failing to recognize the need, and we're going to be paying for it in the long run. So because coming back to fix the shortfall if we wait too late and then things start to fall apart. It always costs more to fix something that's you've allowed to break down than it does to do maintenance. So that's where we're at. I don't know if you gentlemen have seen every week, usually it's once a month, but every week now during the legislative session, our chairman of the commission, Chairman Miller, has put out a newsletter. It's called A View from the Chair. And this last week's commentary from him was basically on the fact that our grandparents, the generation that served in World War II, came back, paid for interstates. We were the first state where they started the interstate system there at I-70. And we were failing to take care of what our grandparents paid for. So he had a good editorial on stepping up and taking responsibility. So.
What if my grandparents were from California?
Well, they were still paying. They just weren't. They didn't start the interstate. Great source of pride, but unfortunately, we're failing to maintain it. So.
Thank you.
I need a 5-minute recess. We'll recess for 5 minutes.